like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. And before we go any further, I want to thank Glenn Hatchell for hosting last week's show in my absence with a couple of illuminating conversations and some nifty animal songs. Also, I'd like to congratulate Florida Voices for Animals on Saturday's Veg Fest. A great day and a great event. Their 10th one, by the way, and it appeared to be better than ever. So on today's show, my guest is Rick Shabaty, the co-founder and executive director of Suncoast Animal League, located in Palm Harbor, Florida. Suncoast Animal League is a no-kill animal welfare organization that is distinct by caring for both domestic animals and wildlife on occasion. Shabaty has a long history of helping animals in the area, having served as the executive director of the Humane Society of Pinellas for more than 20 years before helping launch Suncoast. Today's conversation with him is tied to Suncoast Animal League holding its 12th annual Dogtoberfest this Saturday, November 16th at Highlander Park in Dunedin. This will not only feature Suncoast offering an array of adoptable animals, but the event will also feature nearly 30 rescues doing the same. Later in the program, I'll speak with Annette No of KittyCon Tampa 2019, coming up November 30th and December 1st. This is a fan convention that focuses on people's love of cats and cat rescue, but also features cat experts, speakers, and panels. And full disclosure, I'll be serving as the MC of KittyCon all weekend, interviewing guests on stage, moderating at least one panel, and more. And lastly, a programming note for later in the show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I have a pair of tickets to see Lucero and Jay Jackson, very strong bill, at Janice Live, February 28th. Right now, though, let's get to Rick, a conversation we're streaming on Facebook Live, by the way, via my personal Facebook page. Just if you're anywhere in the vicinity of Facebook, just go to Duncan Strauss, and you'll see Rick and me and a dog we'll be meeting shortly as well. So we also, of course, invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This welcoming back to WNF is Rick Shabaty on Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Duncan. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Okay, so thanks for coming in studio and joining us again on Talking Animals. Before I guess we'll go any further, it's incumbent on us to meet Denny. So we have all kinds of things to talk about, but let's talk about Denny first.
Well, Denny came to Suncoast Animal League on October 1st. He was found by Pasco County Animal Services in Pasco County on 19. And Denny weighed 52 pounds. He was literally, barely able to walk. And he was literally a walking skeleton. And we've had, a lot of medical issues with him. He's really progressed. He's a great dog. And actually, this week, on Monday, we weighed him, and he topped the 80-pound mark. So great strides, and he's healthy once again. He still probably has another 8 to 10 pounds to go before he's at his full capacity, but he is available for adoption now. He had a large mass underneath his upper lip. It was attached to his gums. We just had that removed.
Oh, wow.
And that came back. It was not cancerous, so that was good news. But something that occurred, we've had three starved dogs that have come to us over the past 6 months. Chance, Lucy, and then and now Denny, and all of them from up in Pasco County. And all of them had something similar happen. Once, like for instance, with Denny, once we had him for a little while and he was eating on a regular basis, all of a sudden he vomited up a Brillo pad, two shoestrings, a mayonnaise packet, huge meat wrapper, very thick plastic meat wrapper. Then there was another object that we couldn't identify.
So this was while he was on his own, presumably just grabbing anything
exactly.
he could.
Exactly. My guess, he got into garbage that had that meat wrapper with the meat smell on it.
Yeah.
And the other items probably were near it, and he just smelled like food, so he ate it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So sounds like we talked briefly before we came on the air. So your theory is that his owner died and there was no provision in place for his care.
Right.
So he was just on his own subsequently?
He was microchipped, so we were able to trace that back to an owner who lived in Pasco, East Pasco County, and his owner had passed away in May, and then at that point we lost all track of him.
Mm-hmm.
So between May and October, he just wandered the streets, but he was miles and miles and miles away from his original home. And he does have a lot of house manners. I've been fostering him since the day he came in because he needed a lot of kind of extra special care. And he's got house manners.
He was a family dog at one point.
He's just a good boy. Our veterinarian said that he had a hematoma. At one point in time, he had a hematoma on his ear, and they had it surgically taken care of. So he had good care. He has manners, and he's a big boy. He's a big boy, big strong boy. He's 10 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So. He's rallied, and he's got a good prognosis, obviously, especially with the thing being removed that was not cancerous. And so if he's not snapped up before, based on people seeing him today and hearing about him on Talking Animals and seeing him on Facebook Live, he will be available for adoption at Dogtoberfest.
At Dogtoberfest on Saturday, yes.
Yeah.
And actually, at this point, we have 100, and Denny will make 114 dogs. We will have, Suncoast Animal League will have available for adoption that day, anywhere from puppies to dogs like Denny that are 10 years old.
Yeah.
And then, like you mentioned earlier, there's going to be 30, 40 other rescue groups out there that'll have dogs available for adoption. And if you're interested, Duncan, Skunk Rescue out there too.
I saw that. Yeah, I was going to circle back to Dogtoberfest, and we still will. But what I thought you were going with was the running of the wieners, which I always enjoy saying on the air.
We have people that love to be official wiener holders for the dogs and such. They got their own T-shirts.
This is a family oriented show.
There
right,
we go.
Please. All right,
we
will come back to Dogtoberfest.
Yeah.
But one of the things, I want to talk about Dogtoberfest. I want to talk about Suncoast Animal League. But as I noted in the introduction, you've got a long history of working in animal welfare in this area and maybe beyond as well. So I just thought it'd be great to get a little sense of your history first. Take me back to the beginning. How did you get into working with animals, into this line of work?
Grew up loving animals, of course, and such. But I was on the board of directors for at that time it was called Clearwater SPCA.
Mm-hmm.
That's how far back that goes.
Yeah.
And then at one point it was failing, and they asked me to step in, and I took over as director. And then, we changed the name to Humane Society of Pinellas. And so I was there for 20 years. And then at that point, left there and started Suncoast Animal League.
And what year did you start Suncoast?
2006.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. December 2006.
Yeah. So that's so you've been at this a while.
And it's been really cool to watch the changes. How animals have changed how they've become so much more of a family member.
Yeah.
And then how the communities are changing to allowing them to come out and do things that they didn't used to be able to do, is, going to restaurants and people are very busy. In most cases, mom and dad are both working, and it gives an opportunity to come home, grab the dog and run out to dinner somewhere and spend some time together as a family.
Well, that's funny. I was going to ask you a slightly different question, but you answered a probably better one anyways, because what's happened just in terms of people and their animals, you obviously seen a shift. What I was going to originally ask is what kind of over, I guess we're talking about 35 years or so in the area, mm-hmm. it looks like working with the animal organizations of one kind or another. What kind of shift you've seen on that kind of landscape? Like how have animal rescue and welfare organizations changed over that arc of 35 years in your view?
It's changed a lot. There's, I believe there's a lot more respect out there, one, for the dogs and cats that need homes. I don't think they're looked at as a second-class citizen anymore. And more and more and more, it's, you know, that old don't shop, adopt mm-hmm. attitude is coming in place. And I think just how animals are have become part of the family has changed tremendously.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we talk about at our shelter with our staff, with our volunteers is, you know, it's great when you adopt out that puppy or that one dog or that kitty and that stuff. But think of down the road, how many lives you are changing, because those kids are going to grow up with that dog or with that cat and they're going to have it for 15, 16 years. And, you know, and then they're going to grieve over it. And then pretty soon they're going to be old enough to leave the house and start making decisions on their own. And they're going to go to a shelter or to a rescue and adopt a cat or dog. And that's just going to go throughout the years and that stuff. So that one puppy or that one kitten going to make a whole lot of difference for animals down the road.
So do you see that then as kind of one product of just what has changed over the years is that there's that generational reasonable expectation that the people taking home the dog from the shelter today, when they have their own kids or whatever, are likely going to perpetuate that
Because a lot of times, you bring the dog or cat in and you have a child, that's where they first learn about responsibility and such. And,
yeah.
And a cat or dog are relatively short lived. And so you're going to learn about death in many cases from that pet when it's older and passes away.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and so the animals teach so much, you know, throughout their lifetime.
And I'd like to think at least one of the hopes along the way, similar to what you mentioned, is that the exposure to the animals and just what goes with caring for them and when they get sick and eventually, sadly, when they die, there's just sort of a cultivation of compassion and empathy that in a house without an animal, there still might be other ways to get there, but that's like kind of a very natural way to get there, it seems.
Oh, it is. And like I said, that's, you know, that's where the animal becomes so much part of the family unit, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not that they just have a dog or they just have a cat. They have a new family member.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times we see them come back for a second. That happens often.
Sure.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, not even waiting that many years,
exactly.
Not until another cycle, just like, hey, we have one dog, it's great. Maybe two dogs would be twice as good.
There you go. That's what happens.
Yeah.
So that's one of the biggest changes. And of course, social media.
Yeah.
You know, Facebook can be a pain in the butt
mm-hmm.
sometimes.
Sure, it has its flaws.
And everybody's got their negative comments about whatever you do and that stuff. But all in all, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, it doesn't seem like that long ago we celebrated that we hit 10,000 likes, you know, and now we have over 136,000 people following us, you know, and around the world. And it's pretty cool. You'll hear Ireland says, hey, Jeffrey, get better, you know. And, you know, so when we have a dog, like, for instance, well Denny's one of them.
Yeah.
And every day Denny goes to, we have a thrift shop, and Denny goes to the thrift shop, which is, you know, right across the street from the shelter. And people come in all day long just to come in and meet him, maybe have their picture taken with him.
Oh, wow.
Rub his belly. He's, you know, he loves having his belly rubbed.
Sure, who doesn't?
And, you know, and people really get involved. We have a dog now that we got a few weeks ago from up in it's Highlands County Animal Shelter in Sebring, and it appears that somebody poured boiling water over the back of the dog, Jeffrey. And so we've spent over $10,000 at Blue Pearl, and he's well now. He's still bandaged and wrapped in bandages, but his bandages, he's out of the hospital. His bandages have been cut down to a bandage change once every 3 days instead of every day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's going to survive. He's going to do well and that stuff. And, you know, and he's got a fan club from around the world.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Product of social media.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I can remember when we spoke in this studio, I think it was about 8 years ago. And even then, especially when there was some sort of major event, we're going to talk about a couple that, one that happened, I think, right before we spoke 8 years ago, and one that happened just recently. And just how even then, much less now, social media was pivotal, even if it was sort of in its formative stages,
right,
to getting the word out. If you need to get fosters or like, hey, there's a problem here, step up. That's really how you can get those kind of numbers to step up quickly when you're in an emergency.
Exactly. And you look back and you wonder, you know, how did we ever do it, you know, without Facebook or without, you know,
yeah,
you know, it's just that's how much things have changed too.
So as far as Denny, who again people can see on Facebook Live, we this is Talking Animals, by the way, on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tune in, my guest is Rick Shabaty, the co-founder and executive director of Suncoast Animal League, which is holding its 12th annual Dogtoberfest, a huge animal adoption event this Saturday, November 16th at Highlander Park in Dunedin. If you'd like to ask Rick a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. And what I was about to say is that this conversation is streaming on Facebook Live. You can check out, find that on my personal Facebook page, Duncan Strauss. And then you'll see Rick and myself, but more importantly, perhaps, you'll see Denny, who has had kind of a rough story, but has been nursed back to health, primarily, sounds like, by you, Rick, and will be one of the dogs available for adoption. So I take it that when somebody like Denny comes in, emaciated, the growth, who knows what else, and that when you first discovered him, that's kind of a job for Rick Shabaty, right? I mean, that sounds like a pretty intricate thing in terms of, like, caring for the dog and getting him back up on his feet.
You know, and it's not just me, but we have a lot of people that specialize in some of the more difficult situations. Because, you know, sometimes it's, you know, it's touch and go.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know that they're going to make it.
Right.
And so you want to take that on yourself just in case. You know, and so a lot of times we get them through the difficult point and the point where we know, okay, now all is good. And
like where they turn the corner, where they're going to survive, but they still have a long road
to
go. Yeah.
And then we may take and put them into a foster home at that point in time or an adoption home.
Yeah.
And Jeffrey that I was telling you about, it's, you know, we have a person that can take in some of the burn cases, because we had one a year and a half ago that was, you know, the lady, Denali, everybody knows Denali. They, you know, she poured gasoline over the dog and then lit the house on fire because she was mad at her husband. And Denali had third-degree burns over 35% of her body. And she spent 17 days in critical care at Blue Pearl over in Tampa. And then so much was learned from that, not just by us, but by the veterinarians over there. And,
yeah.
And that's why Jeffrey, who just came in with the burns, why he only spent 10 days, because what they
there
learned
was a from protocol,
Denali,
sort of.
Yeah, yeah. That everything was sped up and he got better quicker.
Yeah.
So now, like, you know, it's about, this is the third or fourth case we've had of a burn situation, some not as bad as others, but, you know, so you get kind of a reputation that you can deal with that. And again, on Facebook, I mean, Denali cost over $18,000.
My goodness.
And that's with our discount. Jeffrey there was talking about over $10,000.
Yeah.
And you know, you put it out there on Facebook and
people step up.
Come to the rescue.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Now, are these just notes like, here's a dog that got severely burned, here's what it's going to cost us, or are these actual crowdfunding campaigns that you guys launch in that case?
No, in the situations like Denali or Jeffrey, you know, it happened. And, you know, and sometimes we don't even ask, because it takes a little while for, let's say, the Blue Pearl to give us an estimate on what it's going to cost throughout a certain period of time. You know, and we put it out there. We basically are transparent, and we walk people through the daily routine of what we're going through.
Yeah.
And some of the pictures are graphic, and Facebook provides you with a way that it can be hidden, and you can open it up if you want to.
Right,
and
so you don't have that jarring thing unless you're ready for it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you know, and so people walk through the whole situation just as we are. So as we know something, you know, we're putting it out there. And Denali or Jeffrey become you know, almost their dog at that point in time.
Right.
You
know, they have a stake in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that Denali, you know, she survived, and she's with one of our special homes, Carrie, and Carrie adopted her. But Denali goes to schools, and she actually goes to burn conferences
and stuff.
And she's just been remarkable in like paying it all back.
Right. And now, probably quite an ambassador
that
world, right?
And
yeah.
Jeffrey is at that same foster home mm-hmm. right now.
Oh.
And so the people, everybody knows Denali. Now they're watching Denali helping Jeffrey.
Oh, wow. So Denali and Jeffrey are currently living in the same house?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Jeffrey's being fostered in the same house. And Jeffrey still has a big cone on his head and all that stuff. And we posted a picture just, it may have been yesterday, and of Denali laying on the floor and Jeffrey laying with the cone and everything across her body.
Wow.
And that stuff. And it's just, you know,
it's taking comfort, really, and reassurance, like, hey, I've been through this.
Yeah.
Hang tight. You'll get better just the way I did.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and we had two burn dogs that came from out of state, one from Georgia and one from Alabama. At different times, they were puppies. And we went through all of this and getting them healthy again and such. And both of those dogs are in fire departments now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And Clover, who was the first one, is in Madeira Beach Fire Department. And she goes to schools and teaches the kids stop, drop, and roll. And so, I mean, it's just amazing to see what the dogs do.
What a different way of communicating.
Oh, yeah. And the kids can see them because they have scars on their body. In Clover's case, one of her ears almost missing and such.
Yeah.
And the kids see that, and they realize, you know, bad things happened to that dog, and look how it came out on the other side of it,
right.
You know? And it's not handicapped. Just because that happened, it's not handicapped. And,
right. So, you know, again, important lesson, and hopefully back to what we were talking about before in terms of empathy and compassion. It's like, wow, this dog has been through it, and let's listen to what it has to say about dropping a roll or whatever it might be.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I don't want to belabor too much more about burn dogs, but I guess I'm curious, since you, for better or worse, developed a bit of a specialty in that, are often those situations like the one you cited where it comes out of a domestic violence situation and somebody's just sort of taking revenge or just crazy rage or whatever out against their partner and just saying, well, I'll show you, I'm going to light the dog on fire?
That, you know, not necessarily to that extreme.
Okay.
But as far as picking up the small dog and throwing it against the wall, things like that, or even making verbal threats that, you know, you leave me, and this is what's going to happen to the dog, you know, something like that.
Right. So, it's funny, but not funny, but I mean, I've done a show or two about that, and I did a story about that because it's such an important slow, but it's a trend nonetheless where domestic shelters, abuse shelters, in many cases have not in the past allowed animals to go there. But those that do make a huge difference because a lot of times the victim won't go because they're worried exactly that. Like, what's going to happen with the dog I leave behind when this person is super mad and going to take it out on the dog since I'm not handy, since I'm at the shelter? And it's just pivotal that those shelters allow pets to come with them.
It really truly is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one of my favorite stories going back my 30-some years and such, what is a domestic violence situation. The woman is removed from the house, and a lot of times she goes into the CASA or wherever it may be for 30 days, and she had no place to take the dog. It was a large lab mix, about 10 years old. She's had it since it was about 6 weeks old. So this dog has gone through all of that she went through too. And we took in the dog and we held it. And when she was able to get out, she had to leave the state, go elsewhere. We weren't really allowed to know where she went.
Sure.
But she was out of state and she wanted her dog back. And one of our volunteers was a flight attendant for Delta. And so we were able to make flight arrangements to take the dog on the plane. And our volunteer flew with her. And, you know, we flew to California, San Francisco, where the dog was picked up by an organization there we had arranged with.
Wow.
And then drove him to across the state lines to another area where another shelter picked him up.
Still
and eventually,
super careful and, to not leave any trail,
exactly.
It sounds
and,
like, yeah.
And got the dog back to her. And for years, I received every Christmas a handmade Christmas ornament from that person.
I'm sure it probably made a huge difference.
It was very special.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about Suncoast. So with that long history at the Humane Society of Pinellas before you launched Suncoast, what did you have in mind and what propelled the vision or how you wanted Suncoast to look and be and operate based on what you had learned from all those years previous to Suncoast?
Boy, that's a really good question. It was more of a freedom, I guess you might want to say, you know, and to be able to do more than you want. And it was humbling because, you know, at the Humane Society, we had 34 employees. We had 6.5 acres, you never wanted for space, really.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then we go to Suncoast and we have 1,700 square feet, you know.
Yeah, small facility by comparison.
Exactly.
For sure.
And not even close.
Yeah.
So we have to operate completely different.
Yeah.
When we get a call from, say, Pasco Animal Services or mm-hmm. Hillsborough County,
yeah.
and we're going to take in 27 animals, we just don't have 27 available cages for, you know.
Right.
So that's where social media comes in, and that's where we put it out there, and that's where we have foster homes. And it's not uncommon for us sometimes to get 60, 70 dogs in a day on a rescue, a situation that happened.
Yeah.
And by the end of the day, have all of them into foster homes.
Wow.
You know, and so that's where so much has changed, because when I was at the other place, you had all the kennels in the world. You didn't really have to worry about that.
And there wasn't that sense of urgency
exactly.
that you sound
there,
like you it, deal with regularly.
Yeah, there yeah. is now.
Yeah.
And that's where we build up such a huge foster.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. So I think it's a little more intimate this way.
Right.
You know.
But it's also kind of lean and mean and very efficient, it sounds like.
Well,
right?
And you know what? The dog is, or cat, is a lot better in that foster home than it is at the shelter.
Sure.
You know, we have a dozen dogs in there. You know, those dozen dogs bark and make a lot of noise. And,
yeah.
you know, and it becomes a kind of a little hectic and a little stressful.
Right.
And so there's nothing like being able to place them in a home.
Yeah.
And even if the people aren't planning on keeping them.
Right.
Just that they're fostering them. And
it's a respite from the shelter.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And when it comes time for adoption, they can tell us all about that dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever
sure.
it is. They can tell us every little thing about that dog, which makes it easier for the next person who comes along.
Right.
Right. And when the dog or cat goes into that home, they've already been in a home.
Yeah.
So they know what it's like to hear loud music or the TV sets
mm-hmm.
on or you drop pots and pans in the kitchen or whatever it may be.
Easy to acclimate because they've already been acclimated at least briefly in that foster
situation. So the amount of returns are cut way down.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a key, I think, distinction, because it seems like there are some things that distinguish Suncoast. And one is that, again, the smaller facility, but that from the get-go, it seems like it's placed a premium on fostering and fostering quickly, especially if there's an emergency of some kind, and just giving those animals that break and or that experience, which, like you say, then makes the adoptions more successful when they do happen.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So another thing that's different, I don't know how much this plays a part in Suncoast day-to-day operations, but I do remember, and I mentioned earlier, so I hope it's still true, that beyond the domestic animals that a shelter would typically handle, that you guys sometimes do deal with wildlife of one kind or another. Right? I posted pictures today where you're holding fawn or whatever. So how does that come about, and what percentage does that play in the Suncoast operations?
It's actually a larger percentage than what you think, as far as, you know, I mean, you know, what, a couple years ago, Hurricane Irma kind of skirted the area.
Yeah.
And we had around 300 baby squirrels. That happens in the fall. Squirrels are nesting. And, you know, we ended up getting about 300 baby squirrels over a several-day period.
Yeah.
You know, and we actually have a group of squirrel fosters, you know.
Of course.
Same thing, yeah.
And everybody's got to have a specialty.
Yeah.
That's good.
And in the springtime, we get a lot of baby birds. I mean, hundreds of baby birds.
Yeah.
And one of the things we'll do, we work with other groups, too. And when they get, say, overcrowded and they've got a dozen baby mockingbirds that are beyond the tiny baby stage and getting them ready to be released, and we'll take them in and do that. So, and you know, and there's so much Florida wildlife.
Yeah.
There's some, and you know, and we deal with groups that do the birds of prey and seabirds and such, and a lot of times they will call us and we will go out and do the rescue, and then we'll work out transporting it to them, or you know, them coming to the shelter and picking it up, and then they do the rehab over there. And we work with groups over in Hillsborough County, you know, Pinellas, Pasco.
So a lot of times there are sort of associations, partnerships, or whatever the right term is, because again, your actual physical space is limited, mm-hmm. but it sounds like anything that comes along, whether it's a dog or a big group of dogs because something tragic has happened, or squirrels or whatever, you're ready to help in whatever way you can.
Right. We just got six baby squirrels in on Sunday from a Birds in Helping Hand. And, you know, basically they do birds, but they get to squirrels sometimes. And, you know, and
everybody's got to be versatile, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.